are listening to Path of Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community.
You're listening to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. I'm your host, a captain in the streets and murder in the sheets, Legendary Truckware. I'm joined by the champion of the Second City, the adeptic conservative with a deck so explosive we call him Ammonium Nitrate, Crucio.
I love that intro. Thank you. I've never had a hype man before. I got my very own Bruce Buffer. That's exciting.
I honestly would love that career to become my main gig. Unfortunately, you're the only person who likes me as their hype man.
Well, I think that I am very grateful to have you as a hype man and grateful to have you on this episode. So thank you, Derek.
Yes, sir. It's you know what? I know that we talked earlier this week about doing an April Fool's episode. It's about 8:30 Mountain tonight, so technically we are recording on April 1st for everybody.
That's right. And while we're not, this whole episode may not be an April Fool's of itself, I think we're going to play into it a little bit, given the fact that Derek is taking over my podcast.
Well, we and for everybody listening, the reason why we needed to do this, if you follow Underworlds at all, you will know that AdeptCon was last weekend, and my guest tonight was the champion of champions, undefeated on the weekend, and came home with one very sick-looking trophy. So we wanted to go over AdeptCon, and I wanted to interview my fellow champion, Mr. Crucio. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you so much. Yes, I'm very grateful, honestly. I'm very thankful. I'm very lucky that I was able to not only attend Adepticon, but play in the Grand Clash. And yeah, spoilers, win the event. I went back-to-back 2 years in a row, which is super exciting. And I got my golden ticket. So I'm very hyped.
You're coming to Atlanta.
Coming to Atlanta. I mean, dude, on like one of the last episodes, you like challenged me. And you said the Canadians will come down and try to steal the Americans trophy from them and go back to Berta.
Well, on that topic, we'll need to chat a little bit about it and what's coming up. But the big thing that I wanted to ask you about this, surprisingly, I think to myself and just about everybody else, even though it was a Nemesis format, I think everybody expected a certain number of decks and a certain type of meta to come in. But you threw everything that I'd been thinking for a loop. So what did you take?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think they kind of, I think, for lack of a better term, delves deeper into what I kind of was trying to think about what the meta might be. So to give you a little background, I was very up in the air about what game I was going to play at Adepticon, right? And we had discussed this briefly, and because I played MCP, Marvel Crisis Protocol, at LVO, and I actually really wanted to play it at Adepticon as well initially. I've made some wonderful friends in that community. I was able to hang out with them still. I had great time with them. But ultimately, when it came down to signups, I was just not able to get in. And the game is growing very rapidly. It's very popular. And it was like almost a 200-man event sold out. And so I was a little disappointed, but I think I do believe in fate and luck. And so I think for that reason, I was like, well, maybe this is the universe and maybe this is like my internal desire to actually play Underworlds. And it kind of made the decision for me that I think I'm just going to play Underworlds. I'm going to go out there, have a good time. I was like, you know, and if I really, really don't feel like playing it, there is an opportunity for me to try to sneak in the morning of if someone no-shows for MCP. So with that became this frantic and very exciting period where like a week and a half to 2 weeks before the event, I started just reaching out to, you know, my friends in the community, including yourself, Derek, and just kind of get an understand of like, hey, have you been playing Nemesis? If so, what does that feel like? Because up until that point, the only games I was really playing were with Hexbane's Hunters, and that was in a championship format. And so, A, I felt like they weren't necessarily the number one warband potentially out there, even though I think they do really well with Tooth and Claw. But secondly, actually, I think they do well with all three Rivals decks. But secondly, I also didn't want to be predictable, right? I think one of the, great ways that you can do well in an event is if you play something that's maybe not unexpected, but something that's certainly unexpected of you as an individual. And I think last year, when I got to Adepticon with the Crimson Court, Gerard was very quick to point out, like, oh, I knew you were going to do that, you know? And I was like, well, I don't want to be predictable because that means people, you know, if I go, which I mentioned that I might, people might plan for that. So I tried to do something a little off kilter. And so I started having conversations, and I want to give a quick shout out to a couple of people. First and foremost, obviously you, Derek, thank you so much for, you know, being someone that I can always chat with and talk about, and being a good friend, honestly, I do appreciate it. But secondly, I want to give two big shout outs. One to Kairos, who's out in New York City. He's out in Brooklyn. He's, you know, very active on the Discords, including mine, and just someone who I've had really good conversation with over the past couple months. And I was like, hey, man, I kind of need a Nemesis breakdown. And we just jumped on the phone. He gave me like 2 hours of his time. And we just, it could have been a podcast episode, honestly. We were just chit-chatting and it was great. And then the third person is Lathanum, who's also someone who's a very avid individual on the Discords. And I was just like, hey, you know, Adepticon's in a couple of days. I'm still really not sure what I want to play. Just wanted to get your thoughts. And over the course of these conversations, I ultimately came down to a couple things in terms of what the meta might look like. Tooth and Claw Rippers, as I think was something that was really high up there. If the dice are average, you're going to do really well. You can score a lot. And I did feel like they were going to be popular. Secondly was Drom. I think Drom is a good warband. They have some good stats. If dice kind of go their way early, lucky, then you can do a lot of damage very early. And then, and I understand this is a long answer, but you know, I'm just giving you a little background here.
And hey, then, you're the guest. We're here for your input today.
That's right. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. And another one was Creepers with Fearsome Fortress, right? Like I really thought Creepers would be a very powerful warband, given the fact that they can kind of just tank the middle of the board, hold on objectives, be on guard, Drepper is a monster, and the range 2 is actually very powerful, especially in the way that that deck is trying to score, Patrician's Push, etc. Then, of course, there was GSP, which I think even with the beta rules, which we weren't sure they were going to be in effect yet, because we really didn't get very much communication early on, but I'm really glad myself and a couple people had emailed them before the event began to kind of understand what some of those rulings would look like, and then Headcrackers Mad Mob. And I think what really interested me about Mad Mob was that they're a warband that pairs well with all three available Rivals decks, which is Tooth and Claw, Fearsome Fortress, and Daring Delvers. And I was having conversations with Kairos a lot because I think he was nudging me towards Mad Mob a lot. And I have to give him full credit for that because I ultimately decided between Rippas and Mad Mob. And I said, hey, you know, I need to get some games in. I'd spoken to Kyle Dalton, another good friend of mine, great friend of mine, actually, who had a hell of an event himself. And he was like, hey, well, let's just get some games in the day before. So the day before, I show up to Adepticon and I bring Tooth and Claw Rippas and Daring Devil's Headcrackers. And I said, I'm going to play one of these warbands. I don't need to practice with Rippas because it's a very straightforward play style. I'm not necessarily saying it's easy, but like it's very intuitive. And I was going to figure it out. I wasn't too worried about that. So we played 7 games the Friday before Adepticon, and he brought Wurmspat. Wurmspat is a very interesting matchup because Wurmspat has like that damage reduction,
yeah,
right? And that kind of throws off your math a lot.
It really does. You need to not just plan for your actions and how you're going to try and remove pieces, but it also demands that you have your secondary ideas, your backup plans, the joke is you can't put your plans A, B, C's by letters because you need more than 26 of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that kind of pairs very well into the fact that like I was getting confused because like my Rippas, I was trying to do the Rippa math on it and it's like didn't make sense. But then especially with the Mad Mob, I think one of the best parts about Mad Mob is Wallop hits for 3 damage on any fighter that's 4 wounds or more, right? It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And it was just throwing my math off because I was like, okay, well, if they charge me at quick roots and then I can counter with Wallop, but now he's only doing 2 damage because he rolled a shield, right? And so at one point I was like, I think this is actually making my decision harder because you know, like, I'm not really sure if this is the way. And Kyle's like, well, you have to remember, bro, like, I no other warband will reduce damage. And then we started chit-chatting over dinner, and we were just talking about the games as a whole, and we just kind of agreed that Nemesis was kind of like very dice reliant format. I think Underworlds and dice in general are important in most dice based games, but in this format specifically, everyone's kind of running to the middle and just trying to beat each other up. And any game that I won, it's because I rolled better, and any game that Kyle won, it's because he rolled better. And again, I think that was exacerbated by the fact of the damage and mitigation that Wurmspat provide. So ultimately, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to play Rippas. Like, I think this is it. And then Kyle sat me down and was like, look, I know you want to play Mad Mob. I can see that you enjoyed it better. I know that you've thought about this deck and how it functions more. Play Mad Mob. Trust me. Just you're going to enjoy it better. And full credit to him. And again, Kairos for pushing me in that direction, because obviously it worked out, right? Yeah. And so that's why I brought Mad Mob, was because I thought that they had the tools to kind of go toe-to-toe with everybody. I think they paired really well with Daring Delvers, and I'll get into that later, you know, whenever you want to talk about that part. But yeah, that's kind of how I stumbled upon the Mad Mob.
That's awesome. No, that's really cool. And when you – now, it's not actually – the tournament isn't actually in Chicago. It's in what's that little town called?
It's in Schaumburg.
Schaumburg. So – now, what's the nightlife like out there? I'm sure that you got in early and you Vegased it up like we normally do at Grand Clashes. But was there a really good, I don't know, like country bar or maybe a small still moonshine lamp? What's the haps out there?
Yeah, good question. Schaumburg is like it's a nice suburb of Chicago. They call it Chicagoland for like Chicago and its surrounding land, if you will, outskirts, including suburbs. And it's like one of those areas where like it's nice, but like there's not much to do other than like restaurants and shopping. So there's a big mall, there's some nice hotels, and that's kind of really it. And I think honestly it's a perfect venue. I mean, it's an amazing, the convention center is awesome, lots of hotels in the area, lots of good food options. And I got in Thursday, and I have never got into any con 2 days before I'm like for the event that I'm signed up for, right? Which was a lot of fun because I just got to spend the first 2 days just hanging out with bros across two game systems, like broing out, playing like other games, walking around the exhibition hall, trying demos, enjoying myself, going out for good food. Like it was awesome. And I highly recommend if anyone goes to a con, take like a day or two beforehand just to enjoy the experience itself.
That's actually something that I've noticed that I really enjoy doing too. At Nova, I came in a couple of days early, got to around DC and Virginia, especially for LVO. If you haven't been to Vegas, it's a great excuse. I've only been to Chicago once. Do they have a Giordano's out there? Because boy,
yes, pizza. Yes, yeah. I went to a Giordano's one night.
It's so good. But yeah, getting back to the Underworlds, one thing I really want to ask you, because so for everybody listening, I was keeping track on how things were going on Best Coast Pairings, and I was getting an idea of what was happening. I also had several friends there, so I sort of want to chat about the meta that you had there, because if you take a look, the guys from over at What the Hex, they had a team there, and they were playing. I think I see three of them in the top eight, and I want to say there were one or two more. We had two Canadians in the top eight. I want to shout out to Damien and my teammate Jesse, Jimmy Malini, who I know is a previous champion, Gerard, who is a previous champion. Yeah, I don't recognize any of the other. Oh, Kyle Dalton, there we go. So there was a Shark Tank there, bro.
Yeah, I think going into the event, obviously, you know, I want to give a huge shout out to the What the Hex team. First of all, for being just awesome people.
Yeah,
like they're so kind, they're so friendly, they're so welcoming, and they're a lot of fun to talk to, just in general, like outside of Warhammer Underworlds. And so, want to give a huge shout out to that crew. I apologize in advance if I miss someone's name, but Skylar, Phil, Jazz, Alex, Brian, and I believe there was one more person. And so I apologize in advance. But what an amazing group of people. And I think Adepticon has become synonymous with that crew in terms of Warhammer Underworlds, because they show out, they come out to play, and they are the reason why the event is, you know, in the high 20s, low 30s, both years, is because they make up a significant portion of the attendees.
Now, are they based near Chicago? Is that why they're able to get there?
They're in Madison, Wisconsin, which I believe is like 2 to 4 hours away. I think it's in that time range. I was remiss that I didn't get to see Davey, but he wasn't able to attend the Grand Clash. He just was there for 2 days, hung out with the Madison crew, I'm sure, and then kind of dipped out. But he did win. Shout out to him. He did win. Like, there was a charity event that I forget the name of the organization, but I think it's like Goodness for Gamers, I think, or Good for Gamers, or Gamers for Good, maybe. And they had a Nemesis event, which he won, which is exciting, on Wednesday.
Yeah, congrats to Davey.
And one more quick shout out. Obviously, Gerard and Jimmy, you know, two sharks of their own, wonderful players. Gerard won Nova the previous fall, you know, where we were both. Yeah, I know that you and him were pretty much playing in that final. you know, I think wonderful player, kind individual. We had some great conversation. Very, very learned man, and full of wisdom. And then, of course, Jimmy Molini, who's a great guy, very high competitive level player. He's also a Grand Clash winner.
One of the most tactically original players I think we have in this game overall, I think is a feather that he deserves in that cap every day.
Absolutely. I mean, his ability to make warbands that are offbeat or even older function in current metas, I think, is something that has become synonymous with his name. He's become famous for it. And that's how he won his Grand Clash, right? He took a warband that nobody thought had any juice, kicked everybody's butt, beat me in the final.
He took Garrix, didn't he?
Garrix Reavers. Yeah. He beat like Profiteers, one of the top warbands at the time that I was playing. And he won Gen Con in 2019. So yeah, both these guys are champions.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. That's really cool. Now, how was the tournament format done? Because that was something that I was a little confused trying to follow along with.
Yeah, good question. So first of all, I want to give a big shout out to Zach, who's the head of North American Games for Games Workshop, North American Events, excuse me. And he's done a wonderful job running Kill Team, Underworlds, AOS, 40K, all that jazz. He was supported by an individual named Dan, who is also works for Games Workshop. Super nice guy, is a big fan of Underworlds himself. And so I think we were all a little bit confused with the way that the event was going to run. And so when we arrived, we had a bunch of questions. And some of the players were concerned that they might miss their flights on Sunday because the event was scheduled for 4 rounds on Saturday, 4 rounds on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, if the packet says the event was going to end by 4, and so people had booked their flights to leave around that after that time. But then there was a possibility that if there was a fourth round, we wouldn't end by 7. And so a bunch of people had questions, and they had announced first and foremost via email that Beastbound Assault was not viable because it's not available in North America. So you weren't allowed to play Beastbound Assault, period, because the only people who really had it were content creators. Mm-hmm. Number two, beta rules were in effect, which I think most people assumed that, but some people weren't sure, which is another reason why I picked Mad Mob, because I think they potentially can fight non-beta GSP. But going back to the format, so they initially said, and again, I don't blame them for any of the decisions or choices they made. I think they did the best decisions they could with the knowledge that they had. And I'm just really grateful that they threw the event together and gave us so much prize support. So we had initially, they were like, hey, you know, 4 rounds today. You should, you know, try to play your best because you will be seeded tomorrow, you know, with everyone making the top cut. So it was going to be like, so kind of like a lot of people were like, day one may not necessarily matter unless you're trying to, you know, get into that seeded version where one plays 32, two plays 31, so on and so forth. Then what happened after the first round, and I think they had discussed because some people were concerned about their flights, that they had said tomorrow will be 3 rounds instead of 4, and it'll be a top 8 cut, because pretty much on day one, you should have one undefeated player after 4 rounds with 28 people playing. But they had promised 2 days of Underworld, so they were going to give people 2 days of Underworlds. Then when the second day occurred, we were informed that we were going to be seeded But I think there was a technical issue with BCP, Best Coast Pairings, and they even had someone from BCP come and try to set the event up accordingly to where it would be seeded. So there would be a top eight cut where people would seed into one another. Unfortunately, what ended up happening was after the first round that was seeded, the second and third round were it reverted back to Swiss pairings.
Oh.
And so this was a combination of a couple of things. There were people who had shared their disappointment with the fact that we were told one thing and then they tried to change it midway through. There were some technical issues. And then, of course, we had promised people, they had promised people games. So I think given all of those informations and factor in place, they decided that ultimately both days you just played seven rounds of Swiss, mm-hmm. where you can't repair into an opponent you've already played. And then whoever has the highest score after seven rounds would end up winning the event.
Okay.
So a little confusing, mm-hmm. but none of us argued with the TO when they made their decisions.
Right.
We supported them. We understand why they did the way things they did. We gave a lot of feedback afterwards and throughout the event about what things they could do to change, how they can give more information ahead of time during the event and post-event. And I just want to thank, again, Games Workshop staff for being so open to our feedback. I know the What the Hex team had provided feedback, Jimmy Girard, myself, a couple other people, Jesse as well from Canada. So it was confusing, but again, ultimately, we still got seven rounds of top-tier Underworlds.
That's awesome. Beauty. And so on your first day, you would have gotten four games?
Yes.
And especially during that first day when you have four rounds of Swiss, and you weren't getting into, I guess if it's seven rounds, you start seeing the top people would be reaching down a bit because you're not getting the top-rated players. So during that first day, were there any really interesting games or really interesting meta choices that you saw?
Yeah. I mean, I think, funny enough, my first round was against Wormspat.
Okay.
And I have to thank again Kyle for giving me the time to play and practicing against Wormspat, kind of understanding that in that matchup, I think actually Golgotch is the scarier one, given the fact that he can get to three smash, three damage very quickly. And then again, with that damage reduction, and again, we had talked about dice being the most interesting aspect of Nemesis. So I was like, I need to kill him. And so I played against an individual named Jordal who had a beautifully painted Wormspat warband. And I think there were three Wormspat players overall in the event.
Oh.
And all of them were painted well. All of them had come with a display board that associated themselves with the warband. And so first game, I won the roll off. I picked boards. We kind of just fought in the middle. And I think this might be a good time to explain why I picked Daring Delvers was because I really like the fact that you can take two ping damage and you can just ping fighters to set them up for two or three damage attacks, which I have access to the moment the game begins. And they're decently accurate. I think some of the passive scoring that is available synergizes really well with Mad Mob because I can enter the enemy's a territory. I can score cards for being in enemy territory that the Mad Mob want, but then also Daring Delvers wants me to be in enemy territory because I kind of play to the exploration count and being explorers.
Okay, yeah. And you know what? That actually brings up an interesting point. How many of the cards did you use that actually relied on exploration?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, again, the Warband, Mad Mob's, is fantastic because they have so many great cards.
Mm-hmm.
They effectively have two pushes. They have, accuracy. They can steal the primacy. They give you the ability to play with primacy, which is three additional glory potentially per game. And you don't really need to add much to it because, again, most of my deck was consisting of Mad Mob cards, and they have some great surges as well. So in terms of what I went for, the Stealthy Advance,
mm-hmm.
because that card is super easy to score. You just have to be on a cover hex or a lethal hex or a feature token when you and make an attack action that's not in your territory. So you can kind of set that up at the beginning of the game by either throwing an objective in No Man's Land, or most oftentimes your opponent just does it for you,
yeah.
Which is pretty neat. And then I went with Pathfinders. So Pathfinders is a card where score this immediately after a power step if your exploration count is at least twice the round number, so 4 and 2, or your exploration count is equal to the round and one or more friendly fighters are explorers. So that those were the only two surges I went. Every other surge was a Mad Mob surge, and they have, again, great surges. And then for the end phase, I picked three Daring Delvers cards. No, I picked two. I picked Sleepless Sentries, which is score this in the end phase of each fighter is within two hexes. Each enemy fighter is within two hexes of friendly fighters, which is I'm playing an aggressive warband that's trying to kill you, and we're both fighting for the middle of the board. So 9 out of 10 times that's going to happen. And then Cautious Venture was having two or more surviving enemy or friendly fighters in enemy territory, and your exploration count is three or more. So out of the 12 cards in my objective, four of them, so a third, were Daring Delvers.
Did you take any of the Explorer upgrades?
Yeah, I took three. So I took three cards. I took Prospector, Plundered Knowledge, and Dowsing Limb.
Oh, there we go.
So two of those cards make you an Explorer. One of them increases your after you kill somebody adjacent to you, increases your exploration count by two, or you can draw two power cards, which was great in either scenario. And then with my Gambits, I went Flame Wisps and Quick Roots because ping damage is great. And then Temporary Haven, which allows me to place a feature token that's within the same hex as a friendly fighter not in my territory, or increase my exploration count by one. But if you place a feature token at any point in the game with Daring Delvers, you get a exploration count. And the only reason you go with the exploration count option, I don't ever think you do, actually, because it's
if there isn't an available feature hex available.
That's true. That's right. That's kind of how the card plays around it. So, which I got to games where like both available feature tokens were in the mix, you know, which was fun. So that kind of is the reason why I picked Daring Delvers. Again, I have two really easy surges that kind of score passively. I don't have to be successful. I don't have to kill anything. And then two cards that reward me for doing what my deck already wants me to do: ping damage, possibly a defensive upgrade. Oftentimes I use Temporary Haven to put me in a cover hex to make me two dodge with cover. And then cards that, I mean, we talked about Plundered Knowledge, but Prospector is great because you can just place a token, increase that exploration count, increase your defensive ability. And then Dowsing Limb is great because you can attack someone and then just scatter forward. And if you end up in a good spot, you don't have to charge. You can just attack again and then maybe charge in the third attack if you make it. So those are the cards I picked. But going back, so first game was Wormspat. Mm-hmm. Anyways, going back to Jordal, super nice guy. I picked boards and we just fought. And I won 15-3. Second game, he gave me boards. And he had a bit of a rough time with his dice against me, which actually happens a lot throughout this event. And I think there's a phrase, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Mm-hmm. And I think I was good when I needed to be, and I was lucky when I needed to be. And I think that's what helped me do really well in this event. But then I won the second game. He gave me boards because he wanted three objectives, because he wanted to stop me from... I think he wanted to control where the objectives went, but I ended up beating him 14-2. So that was game one.
Perfect. And then game two, who did you have?
I played Joseph, super nice guy. He's on the Discords. He was at Adepticon last year and he played Crimson Court. And I was like, you know, I thought about them a little bit. And he was like, well, you know, like you had done really well with them last year. I want to kind of emulate some of that success. And this was a really interesting game. So I think looking into the Crimson Court Mad Mob matchup, I think I ultimately have an advantage in the beginning of the game because I can deal three damage with Wallop. And so I tried to, whenever I could, I would try to cast a spell, which I took Brutal Beast Spirits or the plus one for your next attack action. If it's a charge, to kind of try to make as many favorable attack actions as I could. And ultimately it worked out in game one. I won the roll off. I picked boards. I won 18-4. I scored most of my deck. My deck has 18 glory in it. Game two, he gave me objectives. And this was actually a very tight game because we were back and forth just mowing each other's fighters down and scoring our passive glory. It got really tight to a point where Velos made a charge. He won the roll off around three. She was doing five damage because she was bloodthirsty. And if she rolls a crit, she gets plus two from one of the attack dice she had. She had Cleave and Ensnare, which is her personal upgrade. And she was rolling like four dice. So she killed both my surviving fighters. She crit on both attacks, five damage, couldn't block it. And I was like, oh crap, I think I just lost. Luckily, I could score all the cards in my deck. And even though my warband was dead, I won 14-3.
Okay.
So shout out to Joseph, who wiped my whole warband in game two, which was an incredible game to play. And I narrowly won by one, and like we both recounted the glory to make sure, but yeah. It was like, it's one of the moments where you pucker up a little bit and you're like, oh no. but very grateful that it worked out, and shout out to Joseph for being just an awesome opponent.
There you go. What was next for you?
Ended up playing Jimmy. And okay. So I think, you know, if you want to win at any event where Gerard and Jimmy are at, you kind of have to go through them. Mm-hmm. At least one of them, if not both. And so this year, you know, Jimmy and I got each other in round three, and I think ultimately we sat down and we were like, well, you know, we both were like, yeah, we knew we'd end up pairing into each other eventually. And he was also 2-0 as well. And I want to give a good big shout out to Jimmy because, you know, we talked about his ability to play off-kilter warbands very well. He played Castigators, so the Storm of Celestis.
Now, which rival step did he use with that?
Yeah, he took Fearsome Fortress, which I think works really well with that warband because they love holding objectives. They have surges that benefit off holding objectives. There's a lot of guard synergy in Fearsome Fortress, and Sleek puts fighters on guards automatically all the time. So very well-designed deck. Mm-hmm. I told him after game one we played, I was like, dude, I'm very impressed by the way you're playing this deck. But we played Jimmy. Jimmy longboarded me, which I forgot could happen in this game. And I think the goal was to like try to stop the amount of initial aggression that I could create. And so he kind of was aggressive with Celestis and Sleek and kept Aphis and Melisandre in the back, or Melisandre, whatever her name is, or Melisandre, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. And he took objectives. No, did he? No, that doesn't make sense. I took objectives to try to mitigate his scoring. I kind of rolled a little hot in the beginning. I killed Sleek very quickly. I was able to ping Celestis, finish him up with Wallop. And the game kind of went my way. After those two died, the game started going my way. He did have the ability to like get some shots off. And you know, those shots are very accurate and at range at 2 damage are very impressive. But I think Dacko kind of won me that game because he just kept rolling a single crit on defense. So okay. I was like, cool, awesome, I'll take it. Yeah. So we played again, and he gave me boards because he knew that he needed the objectives to kind of get that seed glory early. So because I won game one 14-7. I think this game was a lot tougher, a lot harder to play. He had some really cool combos where he has like, there's an upgrade in the faction warband deck that it only does 1 damage, but it's fairly accurate. And if it deals damage, the fighter gets a move token. So it stops the charge, which is pretty impressive. And it allows you to keep shooting at range 3 without giving up your nicer attack. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was a lot harder. I still was able to get Sleek, and then I killed Aphis, and then Melisandre and Celestis were managed to kill Tooth Daga. Mm-hmm. So I had Headcracker, Wallop, who ended up getting a move token, and Dacko. And then we kind of just, no, Dacko died. And Tooth Daga was still there. And then it got to the point where like I was all in his territory, and I just felt like if I can get one more kill, one of the cards I was running is called, it's a third end phase card, which is the Great Hunters. So this is a hybrid for 3 glory. Score this at the end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is in enemy territory and you have the primacy token, or there is no more than one surviving enemy fighter. And at that point, I was like, well, I think I can get this because I think he needs at least 2 people on objectives. And he has this really cool card in the warband where they can kind of teleport from another objective to another objective if there's no enemy fighters within 2 hexes of them. And so he did that. It was a cool thing he did in the first game. But in the second game, I was like, I can't let him do that. So I threw everything I had into Melisandre because even when she inspires, she's just 1 block. I was able to kill her, which I was like, I think I got Great Hunters. That gives me primacy. And then I just made sure that he couldn't run away with Celestis. And I tried to hold objectives to kind of in case there was a tie. And again, very well played the Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And very impressed and surprised by how well he piloted that warband. But I think the Mad Mob have an advantage, candidly, into 4 wound fighter warbands.
Okay.
And I think that's what really kind of got me through was ping damage, Wallop, you know, ping damage, Tooth Daga, rolling 4 fury, critting into 3 damage, right? Because he has Grievous. So I ended up winning that game 19-2. But again, very, very impressed by Jimmy's play.
Beauty. And then you had day one was round four, correct?
That was four rounds, yeah. So I still have one more game to play after the Jimmy game.
Sure. And what was your last one?
Yeah, so this was, again, another impressive opponent, Phil from What the Hex. Mm-hmm. Is a great guy, super kind, soft-spoken, but like firm, you know. So like a very soothing voice. I enjoy talking to him. And it's a great podcast voice, actually. Both the original What the Hex guys, Davey and Phil, both have great podcast voice. So shout out to them. I felt confident actually going to this matchup because I was like, it's Lizardmen. Again, very surprised that he had gone undefeated thus far. And I was like, wow, like I didn't think this warband could kind of hang in such an aggressive environment. But, you know, Phil's a great player and he was able to demonstrate that holding objectives works, right?
And which Ravis deck was he taking?
Daring Delvers.
He was? Okay.
So it was a Delvers dance-off, if you will. And the quick roots and the flame whips and everything was
kind of exciting. So there's a little bit of extra ping in there in the Lizardmen faction, isn't there?
I think it's Huachi's device that maybe can do a ping as well as a distraction.
Yeah.
Fun fact, I never saw that game never saw that card over two games. So either he didn't draw it. Mm-hmm. Or he just chose not to play it. But game one, I was like, I have to stop the Inspire. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to place the I took objectives. And I was like, I need to place the objectives in such a way that he has to come to me to get that third objective. I have to. Because he longboarded me.
Okay.
So again, I kind of like paid the price, not thinking they would they'd longboard me, and not the best board, but again, one that I can still get Headcracker and Daka to able to attack someone on the midline because of their ranged abilities. So very lucky. Clackjaw kind of starts the game walking up the board, and I immediately he makes a charge, and I quick roots him, and I was like, cool. I just have to make sure Wallop hits, and then next I charge, Wallop hits, Clackjaw's off the board. I'm like, hell yeah, this is great. And then from there, I just made sure that when I made a charge, I was either on an objective or I pushed someone off an objective. Mm-hmm. And I was able to hold the Inspire off until the second round. Beginning of the second round, he got it fairly quickly. But in that first round, I killed Clacktrock, I killed Huachi, and that was enough to gain primacy. And then round two, I was able to finish off Kizitaka. And then towards the end of the game, he just had Autopoddle left. So I was able to kind of just fight and fight and fight. I will say Phil did have some unlucky dice in our matchup. I think he played it well, but I just think like he had a poor mulligan in the beginning where he like got five upgrades, which always sucks. And so he had to toss his hand and draw into something else. And then the dice didn't really work out for him. And what was really crucial was that I was able to just hold off the Inspire and take down Clacktrock. Mm-hmm. And then I think when you start relying on Autopoddle, you kind of start crit fishing. And then he never rolled a hit with Autopoddle, right? So that was kind of tough for him too. But going into game two, I think he realized that he can't really fight me. So he has to score objectives. Right. So he went for the objectives. I sent up, you know, nice and wide. And I made sure that I orientated in a way where I could get at least 2 to 3 charges if he doesn't do any push cards. And this game was, I think, very lucky for me in the beginning. Again, I get Clacktrock. He charges me. I quick roots him. I couldn't get Wallop to him, but I had Flame Wisps. So I had double ping, Flame Wisp, Clacktrock. And then I charged with Tooth Dagger and killed him.
There you go.
And I was like, wow, that's awesome. And then I, second activation, I charged with another fighter at Autopoddle. He kind of stuck Autopoddle up the front. 2 dodge on an objective is very hard to get through. But I rolled a crit hit. And Autopoddle goes down. And I was like, well, this is kind of working out. And that game, he kind of souped up Kixitaka. But I ran a card called Thick Hide, which is a Mad Mob card where you can't take, if you would take exactly 1 damage, you don't take any damage. Mm-hmm. And Kixitaka has an action where he can just ping someone for 1 damage. And that actually kept my Headcracker long enough alive to where I could take full advantage of gaining the primacy token, inspiring my fighters, and then trying to fight him. And I think, again, this is a hard matchup for him when Clacktrock goes down, right, early. And so I just prioritized Clacktrock, and then from there I just tried the best that I could to stop the objectives. And so I ended up winning game one, 18-4, and then game five or game two, 18-5.
There you go. So undefeated on day one.
Yes.
And did you know that they were going to cut to eight at that time, or did you find out the next day?
So we knew that they were going to do a top eight cut. Mm-hmm. We didn't know how pairings were going to work. So it could have just been like a Swiss between the top eight,
right?
Which was to me a little frustrating because I had worked hard to try to like get a good seed so that I could play into someone potentially. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a top eight game, so I'm not playing a slouch, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, well, I hope they work. It works out that way, but it doesn't. It doesn't. But I decided to just go grab some dinner with some of my MCP friends. Kyle came along, and I just went to bed early. I was like, I probably need to like get some good sleep. I'm not going to, you know, really play around too much. And I was so nervous for the next day, actually, that I kept waking up throughout the middle of the night thinking that I had like woken up too late or I missed the event.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got a bit of a restless sleep, but I was really just so nervous because up until this event, I was a little concerned with this, I guess you can call it a little bit of luck, but like no one who's gotten first place on day one has ever won the second day in any Grand Clash.
Okay.
So I was like, am I going to lose now? Because I got first on day one, right? Mm-hmm. Like last year I was third going into day two.
Oh, I see.
And if you look at all the UK events that have happened that are 2 day, the person that's winning day one doesn't win day two. So that was something that I was like, oh no, you know, but then Kyle was like, dude, shut up. Like, you'll be fine. Yeah. Just figure it out. Play your damn game. Stop being weird. And so that night Kyle were having dinner and we were like, he's like, bro, you got to close it out tomorrow. And you know, I got to win best painted so we can both be back-to-back champs. Oh, like, hell yeah. Let's try it. Let's try it. And actually in that situation, Kyle would have been 3-time best painted at Adepticon. Mm-hmm. Because 2019 and then 22-23, because there was a little break because of the pandemic. So, yeah, that goes into game or day two, really.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then so your first game. So day two, you can't play anyone that you did play on day one.
We didn't know that yet. I thought I was going to have to play into Jazz, Phil, Jimmy, Brian, you know, the rest of the guys in the top eight. I think Skylar was in the top eight as well. So.
Yeah, I've got Skylar was number six here. Yeah. So who was your first game that day?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. So they ended up seeding the first event round. So I ended up playing Jazz, which I said, if they seed, I'll play Jazz. Jazz had a really cool deck with Tooth and Claw and Black Powder's Buccaneers.
Oh.
And she had actually played Gerard the day before. And I'm not sure if she beat him. I think she did, actually. Or tied with him, but the warband is actually very scary given the change to swag counters thanks to the beta rule. So we play. She longboards me because she loves. Apparently, she Jazz is like the longboard person, so she loves longboarding people, which makes a lot of sense because her fighters have a lot of threat range. You can keep them safe early. They all move five, or most of them, the beasts do at least. And then you know you kind of stick Black Powder in the front, and he's kind of a big boy to get through, right? And so. That one was, I think, a little tough at first because I was like kind of nervous on how I was going to go about doing things. Mm-hmm. But Jazz had some of the worst dice luck I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
Ever. It was actually – and you know, kudos to Jazz. She's someone who put a smile on her face, laughed through it, smiled through it, and just said, hey, you know, we're playing a dice game and it's dice. It happens. And I would say her attitude was infectious. And I was like, you're right. You know, you're taking everything so stoically, so impressively. So huge shout out to Jazz, but like over both games, she maybe hit like three attacks. Mm-hmm. Whereas I was like, I think I was pretty average on dice. You know, if I made four, I would hit two, miss two. But the fact that she's not hitting really any means that I just kind of killed her warband, both games, unfortunately. So, I won those games. I won the first roll off. She won the first roll off, longboarded me. I ended up beating her 17-0. Actually, that's wrong. I think she scored a couple glory, 17 to maybe 3 or 4. And then I took boards. And then again, she got terrible bad luck in game two. Again, she's such a good attitude, such a wonderful opponent. I ended up winning 17-0.
Okay. What about game two there?
Game two. So this is when we realized that they had paired us wrong because Jimmy got paired into the other top four person at that point, which was Brian. And I was supposed to get paired into Phil. So I look at pairings and I get paired into Skylar, another What the Hex person who I was very excited we got to play because he was another Mad Mop player, but he had taken Pearson Fortress. And so, and this is a great game, by the way. Shout out to Skylar. Not to say that none of my previous games were great, all great opponents, but this one was particularly challenging for me and very memorable, I think, for both of us. So I go up to the TO and I'm like, hey, I think you paired me wrong. I'm supposed to be playing Phil. And they're like, yeah, that's weird. So then they called the BCP guy over and the BCP and then they started talking. We kind of gave them their space and they were like, hey, we can't change the way the pairings work. I was like, but, you know, like, and I questioned whether they could do it manually or not, but they said they couldn't, which I thought was a little strange because in the past, I think you could have been manual. But at that point, it was like you're only playing against people you have not played against. So I was like, all right, well, it is what it is. And Skylar was like, well, hey, I've been wanting to play you. And I was like, yeah, I wanted to get our game in too. So let's just have fun. Let's play. So his first game is actually probably like a brain burner. So I kind of got the gist of what Fearsome Fortress was doing after I saw what Jimmy did with Castigators. But we start playing and I was like, well, I think objectives maybe matter more to him than me because he has stockpile, right? So I take objectives and I'm pretty sure he longboards me again. So I get longboarded like three times and I was like, Jesus. And so this game is really interesting because I think I'll flat out say I think Skylar outplayed me in this game.
Okay.
It was really interesting because I killed three of his fighters. He didn't kill any of mine. He has one fighter left and we're both going into game three with like four glory apiece, or not game three, round three. Cause like I was so scared of his fighters that I just opted not to take primacy in some situation is finish them off with a ping. Right. Because I respected the amount of damage that both Tooth Dagger Wallop and Headcracker can do. And so we get in this weird situation where I'm like, I tell him, I'm like, dude, it's kind of hard to score some of my surges because you haven't been like damaging my fighters. And I was like, I've been holding on to Green Fury all game.
Yeah.
And Green Fury is a card where you just make a successful attack action with a fighter with damage, right? Which is fairly doable in Nemesis, if not in general, really. And I think he forgot that I told him that. It was a stressful game. I don't know. But I didn't toss it because I was like, maybe there's a chance, you know? And he's like kind of frustrated, which deservedly so. Again, a wonderful opponent who was able to take the dice luck on the chin. But he kind of just was like, you know what? I'm just going to shoot with Dacko because like if I'm just going to move, I might as well charge. Ends up double critting on the attack and deals the damage to Headcracker. And Headcracker is inspired with three fury. And I was like, okay, well, Green Fury, here we come. Let's hope this hits. I roll. I get two fury and a crit. And I was like, well, this is awesome. So I get Green Fury. And this is where I think if he hadn't attacked me, I think he wins game one.
Oh, okay.
Because he played Primal Brutality and took Primacy, right? And I had killed someone earlier that round. But then what happened is because I get Green Fury, I go into my I score into another card, which gives me Great Hunters. So I end up winning game one, 13-6.
Okay.
Right? I just scored a lot in that last round. Whereas for him, because when he charged me, I'm pretty sure I scored Bring It On as well and Green Fury. Or a Green Fury in the subsequent activation. But we did, like, he was like, dude, I messed up. And I was like, yeah, I was wondering why you kind of attacked me because I had mentioned I had Green Fury. And he was like, dude, I completely forgot. And kudos to him for being, you know, super chill about it. But he was like, if you hadn't killed Dacko and taken Primacy back, I score like 5-6 glory. And I was like, yeah, I wouldn't have scored like half my cards because all these cards required me to have Primacy and I didn't have Primal Brutality in my deck or my hand, actually. And so if anything, it's kind of ironic that the one attack he did land in the third round was the one that caused him to lose the game. Right.
So it's goofy when things go that way. Because sometimes just the stars align or your prayers to Gork or maybe Mork have gone through as required.
Yeah. And this actually is a really funny side tangent is both day one and day. So day one, I brought a banana to like kind of munch on throughout the event. And I forgot to eat the banana, but I had really good luck on day one. And I was like, and I saw the banana at the end of the event and I was like, the banana offering that I made inadvertently worked out. So game day two, I showed up with a banana and I put it on the table and I didn't touch it. And Dan was, and the Dan, the TO was like, whose banana is this? And I was like, oh, that's my banana offering. Just super casually. He's like, what do you mean banana offering? And I'm like, well, I inadvertently sacrificed a banana to the dice gods yesterday and it worked out. So I was like, I'm a superstitious person. I'm just going to try again and see what happens. And the banana worked, man. The banana worked. So I
you know what? I think that this is important because, you know, you put the banana to the tribal gods of the savage orcs or the bone spitters. I think that this should be repeated. So if you are playing Kanan's Reapers, make sure that you donate a tithe or a tithe, depending on what part of the world and how you pronounce that, in order to get good luck there. If you are playing as either the new or old Zinch warband, make sure you do have some weird changeable Play-Doh because that's Zinch's favorite toy. Make sure that you bring some sort of totem to sacrifice in order to make sure that you get that good luck for the day.
Absolutely. And for me, thus far, it is the banana.
Yeah.
And I hope that in Adepticon next year, there are a ton of bananas. Or banana adjacent items. So, again, I want to give a huge shout out to Skylar because I think he played extremely well. I think he rolled with the punches and he, in fact, would have beaten me if that attack had not landed, that spiteful attack from Dacko, which he called it spiteful when we kind of post-gamed about it. And he would have beat me by not killing any of my fighters, just from the power of Fearsome Fortress and the Mad Mob itself. And so after that, like, brain melter of a game, I was like, you know, you want to take a quick break? You know, we kind of finished. I think we're on track, but like, you want to just both go to the bathroom, get some water? And because I just needed to walk that off because I was like, my brain is fried right now, right? Because we had taken the time to figure out what worked and what didn't. And then we come back, we start game two, and we go to him giving me boards because I think he wanted the objectives because, again, stockpile. Now, I got very lucky with the way the objectives set up is because I got objectives 4 and 5 on my side. And stockpile requires you to hold objectives that total 6 or more. So, again, I got super lucky where I was like, well, if he needs to score stockpile, he needs to hold 3 objectives. I can stop him from holding 1 objective, right? And I was able to do that. Again, I have to give big shout out to Quick Roots and Flame Whips for just being amazing cards. I didn't miss a single Flame Whips all weekend, which statistically you shouldn't. But, I mean, I've seen games where it happens, right? And with Headcracker, you have the ability to roll 3 different sides on 3 different dice. Ultimately, like, in fact, and funny, it was one game I just rolled 2 crits, right? So it was cool. I kind of got all sides throughout the whole event. But I was able to kill Tooth Daga and Wallop early. And then I think he got in the situation where, like, I could tell that he was getting a little desperate. But he needed to make it work for it to happen. So I have Tooth Daga and Wallop sitting next to an empty objective, feature token. And he just moves Wallop onto that, denying me possibly quite either Green Fury or Bring It On. So again, it was a good move to walk. But I immediately looked at him. I was like, you are wild for that, you know, like as we're in the power step. And he's like, dude, like I got to get something going here. I need to make it work. And then I just was like, all right, I'm just going to attack Headcracker. And I missed. And I was like, oh no, you know. And then I guess we both forgot that Headcracker, he could have just moved Headcracker again. But he didn't, and he just did something else with Dacko, and then I killed Headcracker. And at that point, that's pretty much the game. And so, again, I think his dice kind of abandoned him a little bit. Again, he took that with such great attitude, and we were just laughing, and like, oh, ah, roll, you know, ooh, ah, you know, like all these cool moments are happening. I think if dice had been average, even just average for him over that series, I think he certainly would have won game one, and he probably would have taken me. Well, yeah, that would have made us go to a game three, and I'm not sure I would have won.
Okay.
That series. So nothing but respect and gratitude for not only his attitude, but his level of play.
Okay.
Because Fearsome Fortress was an amazing pairing with Headcracker. And that's when I realized that Headcrackers kind of work well with all three. At first, I was like, Tooth and Claw, Daring Delver is probably the best bet. But now I think Fearsome Fortress, Headcrackers could have easily won that event if roles had gone his way more throughout the event, I think. So at that point, I was like, you know what? I was like, I just need to win one more game. I got this. I hope I don't play Jesse because he tabled me last event.
Yeah, and actually, I sort of want to – this is sort of the game that I was most interested in. As I think probably anyone that's ever talked to me and knows that I know you knows, last year you only lost one match at Adepticon. Yeah. And that was against my teammate on the Calgary Union of Nightfall Tier 1 Shadespire homies, Jesse Poppers Tompowski. And I seem to recall that that started a bit of a downward trend in your record against Canadians in all of 2022. So now that it's 2023, you've been able to get past the shellacking that you have taken from the players of the North. How did it go?
Yeah, that's really funny you mentioned that. Because, yes, my two losses in competitive events last year, Nova and Adepticon combined, outside of the Vassal system, are you and Jesse. You both beat me. And, yeah, maybe I got a soft spot for Canadians. I don't know.
Everybody does, eh?
Everybody does, eh? Indeed. And so at this point, I was like, is there a final or is it Swiss? Because I think Jimmy ends up beating Brian, right? And so I'm like, okay, well, is it me and Jimmy? Like, are we just going to play one on the side and kind of make it count? Like, what's the vibe? What's the mood? And we end up being told that, like, no, it's just Swiss. Mm-hmm. And so then Jimmy's like, so I think you just win already, right? And I was like, I'm not really sure. And then he like kind of walked me through the math and he was like, yeah, even if you lose this game and you lose even by a healthy glory margin, you mathematically cannot lose the event.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, crap. Hell yeah. You know, goal accomplished. Mm-hmm. But I wanted revenge against Jesse, you know, and he was, we ended up getting paired into each other and he was talking to smack, which I welcome. I appreciated it. And I was like, oh boy, you know, like, I really hope I don't get tabled again. Derek's never going to let me hear the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, he's like, well, you've already won anyway, so I'm going to try to destroy you. And I was like, okay. So you're trying to go hard AF. He's like, I'm trying to go hard because if I win, you know, this could potentially get me into second or third. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it. And what a game, man. So I knew immediately that I need to give him – I need to take objectives. So I take objectives. No, sorry. I give him objectives. I take boards. And what I do is I max offset as best as I can. And I pick boards where I can kind of like put all three of my guys in my corner. Mm-hmm. I did this because I knew the pressure was a little bit off because I knew I didn't need to win these games. But I did try to play them to the best of my ability because I wanted to give him the best games I could as a competitor and as a player. But B, I was like, I don't need to score any invasive aggro stuff. I can hard mulligan for surges that involve me fighting. And if I can just kill his fighters, I win. Doesn't matter how this game plays out. It's just whoever kills their other fighters first, or other person's fighters first wins. And that's kind of what happened. He played kind of a little cautiously at first. And so I was able to like steal primacy with primal brutality. And I scored objectives or like leaders holding objective, have the primacy token. And I had three fighters on objectives, which is hunt the world spirits. So I was able to score four glory very quickly, give some of my fighters some upgrades. And then that's when the fighting started. End of round one, moving forward. And he went for Tooth Dagger, as he rightly should have. But I inspired Tooth Dagger when I got the primacy token because I knew Tooth Dagger was his number one target. Because like it's not worth inspiring Wallop, right? Because he's on one dice. And Tooth Dagger, like, not only did he roll a double crit against the first attack with Jesse rolled two crits, I then, like, he would dog bite. A crit, and then I would roll one crit on defense because I'm rolling one extra die. So Tooth Dagger kind of just tanked all of Rippa's attacks. I killed the other two wolves over time and then killed Rippa eventually. So I ended up working out really well in my favor. And I think, so I ended up winning 19-6. And at that point, Jesse was like, well, I don't want you to have objectives because you're going to be able to score too much passive glory if I play cautiously. And I'm going to regret the fact that you are now then putting upgrades on your fighters that make them more defensive or more killy. And then he takes objectives. And then I kind of like, I guess I was a little emboldened, but I also like wanted the dice to kind of like go back and forth. So we just have a scrum in the middle of the board. And I saw an opportunity to take Rippa out because I immediately quick rooted him on his first charge. And I was like, I know this inspires his warband, but I kind of have to go for it. And I killed Rippa. And so I was like, great. I think that's really good because he misses out on leading the charge, which is a Rippa specific card. And I assumed, which was later proven to be true, that he was taking the two cost surge where you get two kills with your leader. Mm-hmm. So that shuts down three glory, if technically four glory with the kill, five glory with the kills, yeah. Right? So that shuts that down. And I was like, well, great. And then we just brawled. I lost some fighters. I ended up killing all three of his fighters after over like three rounds, and I won 15-2. So felt good to get revenge on Jesse because he tabled me both games, and I was able to return the favor, which was cool because he gave me a ass whooping last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know what? So first off, congratulations on Thank you. AdeptCon. I want to say it's probably the biggest Nemesis Grand Clash. And because we are going to have a season of qualifiers that more and more of them are looking like they are going to be Nemesis, I think that you've gotten a lot of valuable experience, a lot of major reps. That's going to be extremely important going forwards as we do the road to Atlanta, trying to get that done. What are your takeaways on what we're going to see in the meta, what we're going to see in the upcoming Nemesis format Grand Clashes at the U.S. Opens? Because I know both the U.S. Open in Tacoma and the U.S. Open in Tampa are going to be Nemesis. Nova is going to be Nemesis. Minis Mayhem in Vancouver is going to be Nemesis. And the Alberta Classic Grand Clash, May 27th to 28th, sponsored by Toolshed Brewery. Derek is your TO. You better come up to Calgary and play us. Is also going to be Nemesis. So what would you think the biggest thing to look out for players coming in would be?
Yeah. So before I answer that, I just want to give a big shout out to all of my opponents I played over the event. Jordal, Joseph, Jimmy, Phil, Jasmine, Skylar, and Jesse. It's a lot of J's, actually. That's yeah. Right. I didn't really think about that till just now. But if I, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the 7 people I played are J's. Wow. Yeah. Just Skylar and Phil. If I am ever so lucky to play, in an event future moving forward and I have the same opponents, I'd be very happy because they're all fantastic opponents, fantastic people, fantastic competitors. I have nothing but good things to say about all of these people. Secondly, it feels good, honestly, to be like, first ever back-to-back Adepticon Warhammer Underworlds Grand Clash champion. And I think it was really important to me to play the best that I could. But what was more important to me was being the best version of myself while I played this event. And I worked really hard at Nova and as well as Adepticon to be as polite, as kind, and as understanding as I could as a player, mm-hmm. As a competitor, and as a community member. And I did have some people notice that and share that good feedback with me. And it feels really good to be able to not only work on myself as a competitor and a player, but also as an individual and as a human. And so I thank everyone for their patience and their support, because I think that's really important to, not only play well, but play nicely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, at the end of the day, everybody wants to win, but we need it's like the dog sled. You want to lead that dog sled, but you got to make sure that you've got the pack to go with you. Good point on there. And I would really like to encourage everybody. I want to say this is one of the probably friendliest communities that we have, and boy, do I appreciate it. So everybody listening, keep acting like yourselves and keep acting in such a positive manner, because the last thing that I'd want is to, be stuck at a Pokemon tournament where you get kicked out for some random reason.
Yeah. But I think one of the biggest takeaways I got was that I tried to implement was if my dice are hot, mm-hmm. Or my opponent's dice are hot, just don't comment on it. You can, if they're starting to miss a lot of attacks, you can obviously say, I'm sorry, this is happening. Mm-hmm. But if in an event where your opponent just starts rolling hot, there's no point in trying to make them feel bad for things that neither of you can control, right? So mm-hmm. I made sure that even when key attacks or incredible dice rolls did happen against me, I just was like, hey, hell yeah, that's awesome. Nice hit, So that's what I think I really tried to focus on. And that's more important to me. I could have lost Adepticon, and I still would have walked away and feeling like a champion because I won on the personal front, which was one of my major goals, if not the goal for this year. I'm super grateful and thankful to everyone who played and organized that event.
Beautiful.
Now back to answering your question. Your question to confirm was,
What do you see coming up in the Nemesis qualifiers as we go forward to Atlanta? What do you think is going to shake out in the meta? What do you see as the things to look out for going
forward? Yeah, that's a good question. I think actually Mad Mom are probably the best warband in Nemesis right now. That's probably my opinion. I think they have amazing play with Beastbound Assault, Daring Delvers, and thanks to Skylar's games, Fearsome Fortress as well. I think they can play that very, very well. So that would be my top pick at the moment, given the current meta, which is due to change due to some awesome excitements and announcements at Adepticon, which I'm sure you'll bring up later. So we'll skip that for now. But secondly, I think Gnarl Spirit Pack are still very, very good. Gerard played them. Brian played them. Brian ended up getting third with that warband. And I think the beta rules certainly slow them down. But when they get rolling, they get rolling. They have some good cards, some good upgrades, some good gambits. And Kira is a monster. Mm-hmm. Kira is a freaking monster. And I was, you know, watching some of the games happened after my games. Not my games, but after game 7. And I was watching Skylar and Brian's game. And I saw Kira like deal like 3 damage to 3 orcs. And I was like, oof, you know, like definitely be aware of her. Obviously, Rippas, I think, still hang. You know, Rippas are a very good warband when dice are average. And then when dice are slightly in your favor, you're just probably going to table your opponent, if not kill most of their warband and score your whole deck because your cards are amazing. Mm-hmm. I was very pleasantly surprised by Damien, who is a Canadian from the Vancouver side. Great shout out to him. He was playing Lady Harrow's Mournflight, and he made me remember why that warband is evergreen warband. They have great cards, great abilities, great fighters, great objectives.
And now, and actually speaking of Damien, and I want to do 2 things just to shout out. Damien will be running the Minis and Mayhem Grand Clash September 17th in Vancouver. So if you are anywhere near the left coast of America or Canada, make sure that you go check that one out. I did get the chance to talk with Damien, really, really good friend of mine. He came out to the Alberta Classic last year, and we actually met at LVO a few years ago. What Rivals deck was he going in with?
You know, I'm not really sure. I'll have to ask him. I think it was Daring Delvers with Mournflight.
You know what? I actually thought it was Fearsome Fortress.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I wasn't sure, so I was hoping that you did. So
yeah, I didn't have the opportunity to play him, unfortunately.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think that with all of their tricks on making sure that they don't take damage, on their ability to hold objectives and how they want to, I think that Mournflight are going to be something that everybody should look at, which makes it interesting because if you get that pack, the other side that I think probably has a little bit more play and is being a little undersold right now are Iron Souls Condemners. They actually just won a local Nemesis tournament in Calgary here, so they can be played really well either with Fearsome Fortress or with Tooth and Claw. And you know what, with Beastbound Assault coming in, I think we're going to see a bit of a renaissance for guys like Molog, especially the Exiled Dead, Rothworn, I'm really looking forward to see how Beastbound Assault with the Pirate Ogre
Black Powders, yeah.
That's going to be really interesting. So I think coming up, going into the next half season, it's going to be really interesting, which really does bring us to it.
I do want to follow up on that really quickly because – no, you're okay. I do think post-Beastbound Assault, Exile Dead Beastbound Assault is the best combination, best warband, best perform. If you want to go win a Nemesis event, you go play that combination. because you're going to win a majority of your games because that if you play that warband correctly, because that deck does wonders for them. And the Nemesis format, you can often risk taking a little bit of jank. And they have a card where it's kind of hard to score or cast, but I think it's a double channel.
Yep.
And you get a free set of attacks for all your zombies or a free move. And if you're able to pull that off, it's often game winning, which is worth taking the card alone. Obviously, yeah, you know, Molag is solid and Molag can tank a lot of damage. What I thought was missing from the event, though, was Fearsome Fortress Creepers. I think that combination is solid. Yeah. I think it's very good. I actually thought Jimmy would probably play them, but I think he did an amazing job with Storm of Celestis. What I also thought was missing was Soul Raid. I think Soul Raid can do some really, really good things. I think Hexbanes can do some great things. There were, I think, two or three Hexbanes players, but I think two of them were newer. But like any warband that's aggressive with Tooth and Claw can do some damage.
So here's what's actually really interesting. I started trying to play around with the new arena and see how good the Murder Girls are. Part of that because they also have their own damage mitigation. Here's what became really interesting. When you become a beast, you can't use all those combo upgrades. And there's a lot of Tooth and Claw cards that would make you a beast. So that synergy just isn't there anymore, or you've got to pick and choose who you're putting it in with. The other thing is that there's a lot of interesting things. There's probably 9 upgrades that you want in the faction deck. And if you want to stick with the flourishes, you're going to want to stick with almost all the faction gambits as well. So what I discovered is that if on your next Rivals tournament, I would say that the arena are going to be better in Rivals than they will be in Nemesis.
And that's so interesting.
Yeah. Then so that's something that I've discovered. And so when we've had a few Rivals games here, that's where I've been leaning right now. I also think that now that we've got a little bit more choice in Rivals decks for some of the older warbands, I think it's going to open up a little bit more use out of those ones as well. So I'm really hoping to see with the new Rivals decks out there a little bit wider net in that area, and I think that'll transfer to both for getting new players involved in the game and getting some interesting Nemesis combinations as well.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting regarding the Arcanine, and I'll have to look into that a little bit more. I wonder if Daring
Delta is Arcanine.
It's probably Arcanine,
yeah.
But Griselda's Arcanine, I don't know. Tomato. what I will say is what I also was shown at this event is that it doesn't really matter what you think is good because if you have the right ideas and the right synergies and the right practice, you can do well with any event.
Yeah.
If you had told me going into this event that I was going to see Lady Harrow's Mournflight, Black Powder's Buccaneers, Storm of Celestis, and Starblood Stalkers in the top 8, I would have said you were wrong. And so I want to give a huge shout out to Phil, Jimmy, Jazz, and Damien for playing warbands that I had either slept on, forgotten about, or didn't think had game. And they did really well.
Yep.
And rounding out that applause, also shout out to the rest of the top 8, Brian, Jesse, and Skylar for just playing amazing games. And shout out to Phil and Brian getting second and third. What the heck's had an amazing, amazing event.
Yeah. No, that's I don't know. I wish I knew a way that we could learn their secrets.
Half the top 8 is them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, and they've got a really good podcast. They're definitely worth checking out. But anyway, coming up, and I'm actually insanely excited for this because I am both a fan of Magic and Underworlds. I am a fan of Tzeentch and Crazy Models, and I always love the Golden Boys Warhammer. The Weird Hollow is coming out probably, I don't know, end of April, you think, early May?
Probably.
Yeah, around there. So we will have a new half season. Two new warbands. Looks like it's going to be Magic focused on both sides. I saw this and I almost got giddy. I'm really looking forward to not just these, but two more Rivals decks. So in the box, you get Domitian's Storm Coven. That's the Stormcast team. You've got Aphelion's Pandemonium, which just sounds cool. And then two Rivals decks, Toxic Terrors, which I really hope synergizes with Nurgle, because I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And Seismic Shock, which I'm not sure what it's going to consist of, but either way, I like the idea of having a bunch more Nemesis decks to play with.
I completely agree. I think Weird Hollow looks freaking amazing. I think you and I are old school Underworlds players. We've been playing for a long time. And I think Night Vault holds a special place in both of our hearts. Mm-hmm. And we've both done really well with Stormsire's Cursebreakers. In fact, both going to a final event and losing Storm. We've both done that. And losing with Cursebreaker. So, and again, I'm a big fan of Magic, just like you are as well. So I think this is like the ultimate box for us. Mm-hmm. And for anyone else who might be interested in the aesthetic, I know people don't really like the Stormcast aesthetic or are super hyped about it. But again, I like it. I like the new sculpts. The miniatures look freaking amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And they have shared some of the fighter cards and the stuff, but we're not going to talk about that till the box set comes out. But it looks amazing. And I can't wait. It's finally nice to see another Chaos Warband come into the game that is mono affiliation, which I think is really cool. They can pack and provide a lot of flavor, and it's super, super creepy, those miniatures, which is awesome. I think this is the first time we're getting like a pretty much a demon warband at this point in this game, which is super exciting. And boy, oh boy, am I hyped to just throw some magic dice more often.
Well, and you know what? If anyone remembers the Silver Tower game, it was the precursor. Oh, well, I don't know how you call it. It's the Warhammer Quest version of whatever that Cursed City is game that they've put out. The name escapes me offhand. But
Cursed City is what it's called.
It is Cursed City. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you've got your team trying to get through to each of Silver Tower to go after the Gaunt Summoner. And these little changelings that you see in Weird Hollow, that's what I just imagine the entire area would be like. So I'm super excited for this. I like that it's going to come out early enough that we're going to get a lot of major tournaments with it in. It's just going to be amazing. So if you haven't checked it out already, do take a look at Warhammer Community. They've got a great article on it. I think it's called Carve a Path to the Heart of the Weird Hollow. And when it comes out, if you are like a Monarai and you will always grab everything that shows up, this will definitely be something that looks great. If you are unsure about it, make sure that you pay attention to upcoming episodes of Path to Glory. Maybe I'll be still hosting. I've got a feeling that I'm just over at this point. But even if I'm not hosting, it's worth getting the review from here.
I appreciate that plug, and it's really nice to hear that. Following up on the Weird Hollow stuff, I mean, that article is awesome. They specifically states both warbands make great use of magic.
Yeah.
And there's some new keywords that are going to be exciting, like stun, barge, hex, and salvage. So I'm pretty sure Seismic Shock might have to do something with stun. And I'm really hoping Toxic Terrors goes into poison, but we'll see. Poison was a much maligned keyword back in the day. That was a bit of a meme. Ask Max Bernstein for his opinions on poison. You're going to get some great ones. But more Rivals decks are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm actually... Candidly, I'm a bit more excited for Stormsire's Cursebreakers with one of these Rivals decks than Domitian's Storm Coven itself.
Well, and you know what? Strangely enough, I also dug up my converted Stormsire's Cursebreakers, because when those models came out, the one thing that I felt they fell short on was making Amy and Rastus look so similar. Mm. And so at the same time, a Warhammer magazine came out with a female Encantor, and another magazine came out with a male Encantor. And so I wound up grabbing both of those, and I've been using them as my warband, which was really funny because I gave my nephew the original warband. And So, because he always wanted to have his own toys to play with while Uncle Derek was playing with his. Well, what was really cool, he's 8 now. So him and his dad came over last Saturday and we had a painting day, which was quite a bit of fun. And so we've probably got a new generation curse breaker showing up. So it's going to
awesome.
Going to be a lot of fun there.
Yeah, that's amazing. And the new boards look sick too. Yeah. Eagle-eyed viewers have noticed, and you can zoom in on these maps, that we have printed snare hexes on the board. So snare hexes are boards where if you enter them or get pushed into them, you get a stagger token. I don't like how they printed the stagger token in the middle of the hex, but yeah, I guess that they have to make it pretty noticeable. What I do really like about it is more magic dice in different colors, which is great, and red defense dice, which looks awesome.
Ooh, nope, that does look good.
Yeah, pretty hyped.
Very cool. Yeah, really looking forward to that. I don't know. That might cover everything we're going to try and get done today.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to give a quick shout out again to everyone who helped me prepare for this event. Derek, my new host, primary host for the episode today, as well as Kairos and Lathanum, and of course Kyle Dalton for being a great friend, being a great homie, being my practice partner, and someone that I can just talk to all the time. Huge shout out to him for being the 3-time best painted warband at Adepticon. He won with Nurgle this year. His worm spat are beautiful, amazing, highly detailed. He's posted some close-ups on his Facebook at Pale King Hobby, as well as on his in the Vassal Discord as well. And again, just shout out to everyone who played in the event, watched the event, participated, and ran the event. Super excited. And big shout out to Zach, because I kind of had a conversation with him on the side. I was like, hey, like, you know, I think we need to, what are you guys planning for price support? Because I think you guys need to work on it. And he's like, well, what do you want? And I was like, well, back in the day, we used to have alternate dice, alternate art cards, alternate this, that, cool stuff, cool tokens, acrylics. He was like, okay, I can work on all that. So that was awesome that he gave, you know, that unofficial commitment to me. And then I guess he kind of felt bad. So he showed up with like 13 to 14 boxes of Warhammer Underworlds product that he just gave away. And he let everybody who showed up on game day 2 and play day 2 grab some stuff. Some people even 2 things. And whatever I got, I donated to the What the Hex crew because it helps them run their events as well. So super excited for more price support, man.
Yeah, and you know what? To Zach's credit, if you don't mind, I want to sing his praises a little bit here. He did the same thing at LVO because I guess the prize kit that Frontline Gaming had been working on for the Underworlds Grand Clash there either didn't arrive or didn't get done, whatever happened there. So again, he showed up probably with about $500 in Games Workshop swag just to give away. The other thing, Zach is the force behind the World Championships of Warhammer. So he's been hosting TO events. They had online TO town halls just to answer questions from everybody who's running the events. One of the hardest working guys that I've seen. So really kudos to Zach. Thank you very much for making this community what it is. Looking forward to seeing everything that you built here, because Zach has a vision, and I think he's probably under an NDA, so he's not able to tell us exactly what that vision is, but every step of the way has been getting better and better. So I'm really looking forward to what that brings into.
Absolutely. And he reassured his commitment to everyone at the end of the event, saying they believe in Underworlds. They know that we're a passionate, albeit smaller group, but we can grow, and that we're loyal, and he wants us to come out. He wants Adepticon to be a premier event. He wants all these events to happen, and they're doing everything in their power to making sure that these events are properly supported, properly run, and properly communicated about as well. So much so that they've updated all their events on the US Open to have things that say like beta rules will be in effect and things like that. So super excited for the future of Warhammer Underworlds on the table with Weird Hollow, but also from an event perspective as well. And also, Derek, super excited to fight you in Atlanta this year.
Don't sing it, bring it, boy! No, I'm really looking forward to that, too. we're certainly trying to put together a really strong team from up north here. We have been running on the hashtag Canada Stands. So anyone that got the recent 40K box will understand that pun. But hey, it's, you know what, I've always believed that mithril sharpens mithril, and you get the best competition and the best communities by playing the best people. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah. Well, what happens when you mithril sharpens against something that's stronger than it?
Adamantium doesn't exist in this universe. That's where they stick all that MCP garbage.
Because I just Googled what's stronger than mithril, and it says like RuneScape.
Oh, did you really?
According to RuneScape, adamantite is stronger than mithril.
Adamantite? That's got to be found in Wakanda or something. I mean, come on. That's a made-up word.
Yeah, but I look at Lord of the Rings, and it says, is mithril the strongest fictional metal? No, far from it. Listen, mithril is strong, but there are even materials within the Lord of the Rings universe stronger than the substance, such as the alloys Tilkal and Galvorn.
I don't actually like Lord of the Rings. I just use it because it's a great, stupid nerd reference.
It is a great nerd reference, and I think you're absolutely correct at the end of the day. I'm just busting your balls. Mithril does sharpen mithril, and Derek, you are a fantastic competitor, and I look forward to bringing it.
You as well, sir. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for listening. As always, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to support the podcast monetarily, you can e-transfer to Derek the Nigerian Prince at hotmail.com. Otherwise, we do appreciate the listen. Please like, subscribe, smash that like button. I've always wanted to say that. And you can find all of our blog content at pathtoglory.com. You can also find us on Discord. Amon is known as Amon on Amon/Path to Glory or something similar. And you can find me as Captain Murder. Otherwise, from my guest host, Amon, I am your host, Captain Murder, and we wish you the best on your path to glory.
God, that feels so weird. Feels so weird, Derek.
That was actually quite a bit of fun.